Welcome to the Hobothanga podcast. My name is Crystal Cedino, and I am the Training Development Manager for the Native Learning Center. I'm so thrilled that all of you are tuning in for another episode this week. This one's particularly special. Today with me, I do have my lovely co-host, Cora Anthony. Say hi, Cora.
Hi, everybody. I'm Cora Anthony. I'm the Training and Development Specialist here at the Native Learning Center.
Awesome. Thanks, Cora. All right. And I do have three other special guests with us. I'm going to introduce them momentarily. Let me just go ahead and say what our topic is for the day. So today we're actually going to be discussing USDA's Rural Development Home Ownership and Home Repair Program. So we're excited to discuss this. And our wonderful guests are Ted Bulow, who's the National Native American Coordinator for USDA Rural Development, and Kathy Glover, who is the Deputy Administrator of Single Family Housing. And then we have Andrea Hively, who's the Branch Chief. So go ahead, everyone, introduce yourselves, say hi, and let's get this ball rolling.
Hi, everyone. Super pleased to be here today.
Hey, hi. Good morning, everybody. I'm Kathy Glover, the Deputy Administrator for our Single Family Housing Programs. Glad to be with you all today.
Hello, I'm Andrea Hively, and Branch Chief Successful Programs and All Things Native Affairs. Thanks for having us, guys.
Absolutely. We're so very excited to have you guys. I know this has been a long planning period, but we're finally here. We made it.
We did it.
Yay. So, all right. Well, with that, let's go ahead and dive in because we actually do have a pretty informative podcast today. I'm going to hit it right off with the first question. Can all of you, any of you, talk to us a little bit about 502 Direct, 502 Guaranteed, and the 504 Loans and Grants? What are these programs, and what benefits do they bring to our tribal communities?
Yeah, I think I can start off, and then Andrea will probably chime in to correct anything that I say that may not be accurate. The 502 Direct Loan Program and the 502 Guaranteed Loan Program, those are purchase programs. So those are programs in the USDA Rural Development where a customer can purchase an existing home or have a house built. In our 502 Direct program, we also have a self-help component with that, and that programs allow groups of families to come together to help each other build their homes. The average, our programs are means tested, meaning that there are income qualifications. So just to give you an idea of the type of people that we are assisting with these programs, in the 502 Direct program, the average income is right around $35,000 per year. For a guaranteed program, it's about almost double that. And then in our 504 Loan and Grant program, that is a program that allows customers to rehabilitate their homes. So with the grant program, they can get a grant up to $7,500 and they can get a loan up to $20,000. The loan is at 1% interest rate and is amortized over 20 years. We're in the process of making some changes, increasing those limits, and they are temporarily increased in some states, but today that is the standards for those programs. And how they can help folks in tribal communities, it really can help them become homeowners. Our focus for our program is just like the name of our agency, rural development. So many of the tribes are in rural areas, so it is a great program to help people in these communities. So Andrea, if you want to add a little bit more to that, I think that'd be great.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks, Kathy. Yeah, our programs are just really awesome because they help those that are in that moderate or low or very low for that repair program category purchase their homes, stay in their homes, live the dream of home ownership, which is an asset building thing, which is what, you know, everybody wants to do in their life, and especially our tribal members, build those assets. So my favorite program being the 504 program, nothing feels better than, you know, giving someone $7,500 grant if you're 62 or older to repair that roof, to get that new heater. And we do a lot of, the most we do is grants on tribal trust land because there's no lien, no worrying about BIA and all of those extra measures that, you know, a lot of homeowners don't even want to go there. But, and our direct program is a subsidized interest rate as low as 1%. So those folks that really can't afford those larger interest rates can really use the direct program to even as a stepping stone. Maybe you had a 184, now you're going to do a direct loan, and maybe someday you're going to be in the income category where you're doing a guaranteed loan, where we guarantee a conventional lender's loan for you. So it's not even our dollars, not even, but just a guarantee on that commitment lender, which helps the lenders out there that we work with. I know we're going to talk about the native CDFIs and some of the partnerships that we have with native lending institutions. And so, yeah, all three of our programs really work well for the different levels and different places you are in your life. And so we're hoping we can do more in Native American countries so that we can bring our products to them. And so thank you for letting us talk about them today. Kid, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, I was going to add two things, actually. The first is we can help tribal members on tribal land or off. Kathy mentioned that this is a rural program, so it has to be in a rural location. The home has to be in a rural location for both 502 and 504. And we do a lot of loans with tribal members both on and off. We've done more historically off tribal lands near the reservation or in rural communities that might be far flung from a reservation, but it's really our want to do more on tribal lands specifically. And we've taken a lot of effort and time to be thoughtful on how we might do that better moving forward, which we'll talk about in a bit. And then the 504 grant program, it's a great place for us to build goodwill. As Andrea mentioned, the grant and even loans that are less than $7,500 are note only, which means no mortgage is necessary. So they're easier transactions. You can combine a loan and a grant up to $27,500, but most of the time when those loans are combinations, they are underneath that $7,500 limit for note only loans, which can make a big difference in a person's life in a season. So if a person needs a new home or new windows or new HVACs, it's an easier way to make a big difference in a homeowner's life. And through a partnership with a TDHE or a tribe or a native CDFI, we're building goodwill then to deliver our mortgage programs at a later date.
Awesome. And you mentioned rural. Is there a specific definition for that? Just so that our listeners have an idea, and for anyone who's a newbie like myself.
So the definition of rural for our program is the communities with populations of 20,000 or less. However, there are some exceptions to that rural communities that were eligible at certain points in time can go up to 35,000. The best way to determine the eligibility, or if the area is eligible, is to go to our website, so our USDA.gov, and search rural development, and you'll find the eligibility. That is the best way to make that determination, because we have those caveats for the grant, what we call the grandfather community.
Yeah, we've got online eligibility tools that are super cool. So you can put in an address if you have a specific home that you maybe saw was on the market that you're interested in. You can put that address in and it'll geocode it, and you'll know if it's in an eligible rural area or not. Just to be clear, that 20,000 or less is not reservation based. It's not county based, it's community based. So most tribes are in rural areas. Most tribes have communities that are smaller than 20,000 or less. And if you find yourself in a suburban or not rural area, like in the middle of a city, there's a couple reservations in the middle of cities, contact us about it and don't make any assumptions, because there may be ways we can work with you, or at least refer you to other borrowers that are active in the area.
I was going to add, the website is eligibility.sc.egov. So just type that into your browser, eligibility.sc.egov.
I love that. No, Ted, like you said, don't assume, because I think that's usually the problem, you know, or a lot of the problems, one of the problems is in Indian country, they assume they're automatically not eligible because, you know, they think this one thing and it's not. So I love that. Thank you so much for mentioning that.
No problems and challenges, right? I think the overall goal is we really want to get that self-sufficiency part in our tribal communities and get them to home ownership. But we also have to be cognizant that that comes with some challenges. So what would you guys say are some of the challenges that may come about when it comes to home ownership in tribal land?
Well, there's many. None of them are insurmountable. Some of them have been sort of used as scapegoats in the past, and I don't want to dwell on the challenges, because there's solutions and there's ways to work around them. But to be frank, working on tribal trust lands is difficult because the transactions look and feel a little different. it's different for our staff in delivering those programs, in that the title work comes through the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They're called title status reports. First, an individual has to get a lease from the tribal government for that said plot of land. Some tribes do assignments. We're going to talk a little later about St. Regis Mohawk Tribe. They don't have a leasing process. They assign land to individuals, but there's multiple government agencies involved. And anytime there's going to be different processes and different parties involved, that's going to slow down the process in general. Historically, there's been some additional slowdowns due to capacity and staffing levels. And for our staff, who are primarily lenders and who primarily work off tribal trust land, we've got a very large portfolio of direct loans and guaranteed loans that we financed off tribal lands. It's 98% of what our folks do, unfortunately. And then to have those specialized skill for that last 2%, when it is a little different, it's not completely foreign. The sort of rhythms and rhymes are the same, but every little process is different. And each family is in a unique situation as well. We're not going to talk much today about allotted lands, but we can also lend on individual allotted lands as well. And for our staff to be properly trained is a part of our internal challenge as well. And to have that specialization for such a small part of our customer base, we want to do better. And we are, we'll talk about some of the training we're doing to well position our staff. But I think the biggest solution that we've had to those barriers is building relationships, relationships with tribally designated housing entities, relationships with housing authorities, relationships with tribes, relationships with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, where we're working with them as colleagues to get to the same end result, more capital available for Native people to own homes on tribal trust land. So our one of our biggest efforts is being engaged and staying engaged and building trusting relationships with all of those parties to move the ball a little bit. So that's where I'd start the conversation and pass it over to Kathy and Andrea to see if they'd like to add anything.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add about the challenges themselves, because like Ted said, there are many, and there are always challenges with, you know, pretty much everything you do, especially in some of these government programs. But I think our best mitigation to overcome those is commitment. I feel like here at USDA Rural Development, particularly in our single family housing programs, we're committed to overcoming those challenges so that we can provide assistance to all rural customers. So we are, we work with our field staff, our folks, and make sure folks understand. We put on some training in the past that was targeted just for this, and to help them understand. We know that there are a lot of challenges. We know it may not be easy to do that, but we are committed, and we want to assist all rural Americans. So we want to assist our folks in Native country. So.
Yeah, we don't call her get it done Glover for nothing. She really does put everything behind it. It's a huge commitment. I remember when I first came on board up here, we put together money for a specific tribal training for all the states so that we could really talk to them about the need and the desire to get this done. You know, if a state comes to us and says, you know what, we can't get an appraisal out here, but we know the value is there. Can we get a waiver? Get her done Glover comes on in and says, yes, let's get this home done on tribal trust land or whatever the case might be. So I just want to second what Kathy said really does. She gets it done for us, and I appreciate that.
That's awesome, Andrea. I was gonna add one other thing. Like, home ownership is daunting. It was daunting for me the first time I did it, and I worked for the federal government and had a pretty steady income. And so I don't want Native people to think like, oh, this is scary and I'm alone. It's scary for everybody, especially for very low income and low income people, Native and non-Native alike. So you can use our staff. You can I implore people to work with their TDHEs and their local institutions, because there's ways that they can do homeownership education and financial literacy, which are some other barriers. But there's great programs out there, and you're not alone. It's a scary, daunting thing to commit 30 to 38 years of your life paying back a loan. But it can be more affordable, it's more rewarding, and it's yours at the end of the day. So I just wanted to mention that as well.
Oh, I love it. I love all the aspects that you guys were talking about. And thank you for getting it done, Kathy.
I didn't know it was called Get It Done Glover. That's a new one.
I love it. That's good. All right. jump to our next question for you guys and gals. So with that, what are some opportunities and improvements that our tribal communities can benefit from?
So we can talk about some examples of some of the projects we've done that we're proud of. And as we just talked about, there were challenges, but we were able to get them done and work through them. One of the things we did here in 2018, it took us a year to get all the way to yes, and yes, we got it done. Or actually, I think it took us 2 or 3 years. But anyway, we were happy to do a wheat lending demonstration program in South Dakota. Where we work with the relending demonstration was presented to us by the South Dakota Native Homeownership Coalition. So I think that working with coalitions, especially that one, is awesome. I won't go into any detail about it, but they presented a pilot proposal to us, and that proposal involved two Native community development financial institutions. And what it did was it allowed us to loan 502 direct loan funds to two entities. Typically, we only loan to individual people. So loaning to an entity was a brand new thing for us. It had a lot of layers. There were a lot of challenges and hurdles that we had to overcome, but we were able to do that. We did one on the Pine Ridge Reservation and then one in Eagle Butte. So we did two pilots to date. Almost 20 folks have been assisted. That's more loans than we do, oh my God, over, what would you say, Fed, a 5-6 year period. That's a lot of loans. So we're very proud. And I think that speaks to our commitment. We have to try to find a way, and then we have to listen to our partners. Those folks, South Dakota Coalition, they're out there. They're the boots on the ground. They know what works best for them in their community. And we just have to listen and try to find a way to assist them. So I think that's, opportunities for the tribes, for anyone to be able to use our program is bring your suggestions, bring your ideas. And then we, on the other end, we have to listen and find a way to get it done. We hear a lot about this pilot. I mean, we hear senators talk about it. Our secretary talked about it a couple of weeks at the Rural List Conference. So it's been a great partnership, which is something that's very important to us. So there are opportunities to partner with us, especially in the housing space. Those are two really important opportunities that I just want to talk about with what the coalition brought to us and how we were able to assist those two Native CDFIs to in turn help individual families, which is what we're supposed to be doing in single family. After all, it is the name of our program, single family housing. So we're interested in more opportunities like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Partnerships are definitely key. And one of the partnerships that I would mention is the National Native Homeownership Coalition, in partnership with NeighborWorks Center for Indian Country Development and the Federal Reserve Board of Minneapolis. Excuse me. I know a couple years ago we were in Minnesota, I believe it was, when they released their tribal leadership handbook for home ownership. And so we were a small part of developing that, but we love to partner and we love to be in the conversation at the table, because just as you said earlier, Crystal, you know, sometimes they think, no, I can't do this. It's not for me. And even if that's surface level, what it feels like, we want it to be for you. So what can we do to make it work for you in your tribal communities? So I just wanted to mention that partnership too.
Yeah, I think both in South Dakota and the National Native Homeownership Coalition, one of the challenges, which is our challenge, is that we're not tribal members or tribal leaders or even TDAG's first option. And a lot of times people are caught off guard. They're like, what now? USDA does home repair? USDA does home ownership? I thought you guys just stamped meat and provided commodities. I thought that's what you guys did, which we do as a department. But USDA has a very broad mission. And so to Andrea and Kathy's point, when we're at the table with other lenders, with other service providers, we're on the menu. we're on the menu of options. And in some ways, the affordability, which I don't think we talked too much about the 502 program, that's one of the best things that the 502 program has going. It's a subsidized interest rate to begin with, and we can do home loans at as low as 1% for individuals for up to 38 years for people who can't afford a 30 or 33 year mortgage. So we can extend the time and we can bring the interest rate down to make it more affordable for those folks. But people don't know that. And if we're not out there talking with HUD, if we're not out there talking with VA, if we're not out there talking with these coalitions, people might forget about that. And we don't think that we're the end-all be-all, but we want to be a part of that discussion because our loans will work for certain folks that a HUD 184 loan might not. One other example I'll leave folks with, just as food for thought, as an example of how our staff's been successful with a particular tribe, is the Akwesasne Housing Authority at the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe up at the border of Canada, between New York and Canada. Actually, they have treaty rights in Canada as well, so they're a multi-international tribe, which is pretty cool. But for a long time, going back to around 2008, we did this review of the tribe's assignment law. If you remember before, Akwesasne, they don't lease land to their tribal members. They assign a home site to a tribal member. So the program director and national office, including myself, went through a review process just to make sure we could secure loans on tribal lands on their reservation. We can. That was in 2008 when they were, quote unquote, approved for our program. And slowly thereafter, we worked with 504 loans and grants. We brought in some of our community programs, community facilities programs specifically. We have an office nearby, a place called Canton, New York, where the area director there, a former commercial lender, really did some intense outreach with the tribe and built strong personal and professional relationships with the tribe, and frankly had some of those coming from his background and being a member of that community as well. He and the program director, over a long period of time, built a strong trusting relationship with the housing authority there, which eventually flowered into 2 or 3 or 1, depending on the year, home ownership opportunity for a tribal member financed with a 502 direct loan, which maybe doesn't sound like much, but year over year over year, the trust is building. Folks are seeing the 502 program as a reasonable, cost-effective, actual way to achieve home ownership. And that just continues to flower. It's not perfect. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's that long-term relationship building between the tribe back towards USDA and from USDA back towards the tribe, which really is the secret sauce, which has made some things possible. So we'd, even for folks who've had challenges with rural development in the past, we'd love to build a healthier working relationship moving forward.
That's awesome. And it's interesting that you highlight something. I was one of those that thought USDA just stamps the meat and that's it. I had no idea until I met you guys that you have all of these amazing opportunities and programs that can really truly benefit our tribal community. So are there any training opportunities coming up or any packaging opportunities that you can share with us?
Sure. I'm actually going to do a plug that we didn't talk about before, but we're going to do more podcasts about some of our programs because we do more than single family housing, too. We do broadband. We do community facilities. We do business development. We do electric. So tune in at a later date for another podcast with the Native Learning Center because we're excited about those as well. But to your question, my apologies. Yes, there are some upcoming opportunities. I'm going to let my colleagues talk about loan packaging specifically because there are some unique opportunities for tribes and TDHEs and native CDFIs to help folks package their loans. We can talk a little bit about that. But I think the most tangible thing I'll point to is our outreach and training has to be internal and external. And so last year, we had hoped to do this in person earlier in the spring. Obviously, COVID happened. We're talking spring of 2020 at this point. So we couldn't do a training for our staff in Montana in person. We had a very, very motivated program director and state director in Montana at the time that made this a priority. And so Andrea and I and others within single family housing and the Montana staff put together 3-day virtual training for our staff in Montana. It's kind of a long answer to your question, but it's got a big payoff. So wait for it. When we went to virtual, we decided, well, we don't have to just train Montana. Our our colleagues in Arizona were asking for similar training, and both staff had had quite a bit of turnover, so there wasn't a whole lot of institutional knowledge on delivering our programs on tribal trust land. So we did that training, and then as an outgrowth of that, our staff in Montana set up a different training for the tribal housing authorities throughout Montana on our 502 and 504 programs. Andrea and I also partnered on that and worked with an organization called the United Native American Housing Association, or UNAHA. Most of your viewers and you know that there's these regional housing associations that represent the interests of housing authorities and TDHEs in certain parts of the country. So UNAHA is the one that's here in the Rocky Mountain West in the Upper Great Plains. Anyhow, that program was designed by UNAHA and us to give program information from our newly trained Montana staff directly to the housing authorities, partly so that we could do just what we talked about before, raise people's awareness about the benefits of our program. But even more importantly, which was a little harder virtually, which is why we wanted to do in person, we want to build the trust and relationships between our local staff who deliver the programs and the TDHEs. And in some cases, those relationships are already strong. But where they're not, where we've got new staff, where we haven't had a whole lot of historical participation in our programs, that's what we need to do, because at the end of the day, Andrea and I are not going to be the face of the program. Kathy's got a lot on her plate. She's not underwriting loans directly anymore at this stage of her career. It's those local folks that really make a difference. And if we can have strong, trusting relationships on the ground, that's the kind of training we want to do. And if that piques someone's interest out there, we'd love to work with your regional housing association or your specific housing authority on similar training, virtual or eventually when we're all healthy again, to do it in person. So thanks.
Yeah, so as far as our 502 Direct program, we do have a packaging type product that goes with it. So your tribe or TDHC or could actually earn a packaging fee to package those loans to us. And so it's a way to have some extra income for the TDHC or the tribe that would want to package those. And those trainings, even if you don't want to package and charge a fee, are a great way to learn the ins and outs of the approval process for our direct product. And so those are we're working on a virtual platform to give those now that we aren't in person anymore. It used to be that NeighborWorks or RCAC or one of our larger intermediaries who help the packagers on the ground that do the actual work would put those on in person. You could pay to go to that. I do know that we have the Housing Assistance Council is going to offer a packaging training at their biannual conference, which is virtual this year. It's on November 30th through December 3rd. And so you could give a Google to the Housing Assistance Council and see if you'd like to register for that training. I don't have the website handy this time, but that's the next upcoming training as far as packaging. But like Ted said, we like to do local, more, you know, focused type trainings too. So if you had a group or a couple different TDHEs that wanted to get together for us to do kind of a smaller, you know, just an informative type session with maybe your local staff, we'd be happy to put something like that together. It wouldn't get you ready to be a packager, but it would get you ready to be a packager, but wouldn't get you there to be able to charge the fee until you actually take the paid for class and pass it. But yeah, that's our packaging. Anything else, guys?
No, I was going to add one thing, Kathy, but go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you guys covered it well. You made a great point. Kathy don't underwrite loans anymore. So I leave the training to Ted and Andrea. They're very good at it. They just invite me, but yeah, I leave the training to the two of them.
What I was going to add is there's been some discussion, especially with TDHEs and for very low income people as well. You might think, well, why would we pay for a program that we don't have to pay for? It's a fair question, but especially in tribal communities where there's not an industry that supports home ownership, like a realtor that guides you through the process, like banks that are knocking on people's door trying to buy for business to be your financier. That sort of support and encouragement and sometimes pressure isn't there in Indian country. These loan packagers can help very low-income people that have a lot on their plate get a complete application in, which is going to achieve home ownership. The most that they can charge is what, Andrea? $2,500 or is it $1,500? I can't remember what it is.
I think it's $1,500.
$1,750. I was wrong on both accounts. So $1,750 is the most that's going to be added on, but that's not an upfront cost that needs to be paid by the borrower. Like here's $1,750. That gets spread across that 33 to 38 year mortgage. So we're talking about a dollar or so a month in their their mortgage payment. And if a tribe or a TDHE or a nonprofit partner or a foundation wants to help pay that fee, that's fine too. It doesn't have to come out of the individual's pocket. But what that fee is doing is paying that staff to put our paperwork together, which I've never said our programs are easy. There is paperwork in getting any mortgage loan. And ours is similar to those types of paperwork processes. So those packagers are really providing a service and getting folks to home ownership that I would argue in many instances, those people probably wouldn't realize home ownership without that packaging. It's not perfect, but I would encourage folks to consider it as a worthy investment if it's between that or not owning a home.
Good point, Ted.
Did we have anything else we wanted to add onto that question? I feel like all of you covered it so well and beautifully. Awesome. You're welcome. All right. Well, I love talking about tribes, and I love, you know, how you all touched so far on just a few tribes and whatnot. But can you tell us about the success of SUNY Housing Authority with the self-help program? How exactly does it work, and how do you get buy-in for families working, you know, houses or off houses? And so I'll let you all go ahead and dive.
Yeah, a few things to start. All success and all of the accolades need to go to the Pueblo of Zuni and their housing authority, Zuni Housing Authority. They've got an amazing staff. They've got amazing support systems for their tribal members. They do their own construction when it's not in a self-help model, and they did some of the construction on these units as well. So really hats off to them for a good use of our self-help program and for a continued sort of commitment to it on their side of it, because it's really been magical. You know, it started off quite a few years ago now, probably 7 or 8 years ago, where their housing authority applied for a self-help technical assistance grant. And we can talk about those grants a little bit. But basically their housing authority then became sort of a general contractor and a loan packager and an assister to four families from the beginning. They worked with four families, and those four families contributed what we call sweat equity, sort of a Habitat and Humanity model, where individuals they're not only building their own homes, they're helping their neighbors build their homes. So all four of those families are sort of in it together. And they also finance their homes with the 502 direct loan program. So with that sweat equity and with very affordable long-term financing, folks realize the dream of home ownership in a really powerful way. It took a lot of commitment from our staff and some leaps of faith from our staff to get that off the ground. So thanks to Rural Development New Mexico and their program director and their specialists that were working and continue to work on that program. Because they too built the bridge halfway out and met Zuni where they needed to be met. And the impact in folks' lives, some of my favorite pictures of a self-help build are from that community, where we worked with single mothers who built their own homes, and seeing the events when those folks moved into the homes and anticipating the impact that's going to have on those young people's lives and those families' lives, having that safe place to call home that's theirs, that they built with their own sweat and they invested their own money through a mortgage loan with us is amazing. And I wish we could replicate it everywhere. Self-help is not an easy program. It's actually quite challenging to do that logistically and line up the mortgages, going back to some of the challenges we talked about early. But when it's done well, and I would say Zuni's done it very well, it can be very magical. And I'll leave you, there's a great video on Vimeo. So just Google Zuni Housing Authority and Vimeo, and they've got this nicely produced video about that whole project and the process. And rural development's only a small part of it, and that's great. We don't take credit for what they've done and how they've stacked different subsidy and stacked different resources to really make a difference in their tribal members' lives. It's really cool. Kathy, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, I just, you know, it's just amazing that, you know, started with the four families, you know, what Ted talked about in that background, and then now we've done another self-help with them. So it's continuous. We have to start somewhere. I happened to visit that reservation a few years ago, and it's just amazing. The families, I mean, they have the full support of the entire community. The children were there. Everybody spoke to how this project made a difference in their life. It was just, it was very rewarding to know that, even though we were a small part, it's very rewarding to know that our organization was involved in something like that. Well, you can see the direct impact on how you changed not only the mother's life or the father's life, but that little child. You can see, and they had little children there talking about what it meant to them. So it was an amazing, and it's still, and they're continuing to go. So great project. Just happy that we could be a part of it.
Yeah, the self-help program is pretty special. It's one of the few grant programs out there for technical assistance for the admin costs of the organization. And so Zuni's self-help grant is not a large one, but they've done well with the resources that they were able to secure from us. And I would encourage other tribes, you know, if you are looking to create housing stock on your reservation or even on land that you own that's fee simple, the self-help program can really get that ball rolling. And even if you're not ready to take on the grant, because it is a lot of reporting and a lot of paperwork, it's a government grant, I won't sugarcoat that, you can still build in a self-help like model with our 502 loan and make your money on the land. Or maybe we can even look to see if there's a small fee you could charge the homeowner to help them. But the thing at the bottom of the end of the day is the 65% labor that the homeowner puts in. And that's a lot of time. That equates to an extra 30 hours a week sometimes to someone who's already working a full-time job. And so if you don't have the grant and you're still building, maybe you could have a model where you use HUD shop funds where it's only 50 hours for the entire build and do some of the labor yourself, but still create an equity model. Our self-help builders have that sweat equity because they put their sweat and blood and tears into the building and raising the walls and all of that. But you can still create that same model and invest the homeowner and get some equity out of it, even without a self-help grant. So I would say if you're looking to create housing stock and build, you know, work with us and our local staff, because we really want to create those opportunities for your tribe and your tribal community. And that was all for me. Thanks, guys.
Amazing. I find it so fascinating because, I mean, if you're going back as far as like with Native culture and like roots and so on and so forth, I mean, that's what our community did. They did build their homes from the ground up. So it's really cool to see that on a more modern, you know, today kind of like scale. So thank you guys for sharing. And I know we were talking about this earlier. Kathy, you were saying something about chickens or something like that. And then we're talking about how the homes are facing one another. We just kind of like touch on that just a little bit.
Yeah, that was at the Thunder Valley. That was a Thunder Valley project that we did on the Pine Ridge Reservation. And that was also a self-help program. They had a site development loan. They're doing a lot of work. They have a community center. They were going to build a strip mall and all of that. But it was a self-help project. I believe we got four homes built, kind of, you know, in a different style of home than what we're normally typically see, you know, more conducive to their lifestyle and their history from that reservation. And they had a community center and had like a community garden. And they also had, you know, some chicken, little animals, you know, running around. It was just pretty amazing. I mean, I don't get to see chickens every day in DC. So not unless they're on my plate, but but they had like this little mini farm there. So it's just, you know, it was amazing. But that was in South Dakota. That project was in South Dakota. And that one, it took us some years to get that one up and running as well. And we did quite a bit there. And Ted, you may have some more to add on to, because you were involved with that project early on as well.
Yeah, I guess I would just say two things. One is that, you know, at the end of the day, what was envisioned and what our involvement was going to be didn't pan out 100%, and that's okay. We wanted to be responsive to that community. To Kathy's point, it's built in a Lakota style. It's meant to reflect Lakota culture, to your point, ancestrally, as well as in the present moment. And so we didn't get exactly as far as we thought we were going to get, nor maybe did the community, but plans change, futures change, realities change. And we were really pleased to be a part of that from the get-go. We also helped with some water and waste support, the infrastructure that is underneath those homes. So there's different ways, even if we're not helping with the housing, with the mortgage for that house, we can also help with infrastructure that brings down the cost of whomever the developer might be. Thunder Valley CDC is a nonprofit. They are the owners and the developers of that project. But if the developer is a tribe and the tribe's looking to bring down their development cost, we have other tools outside of our mortgage programs, which can bring down the cost of development, which is going to bring down the cost of housing for each individual that's going to need a mortgage eventually. So all of us have had a chance to visit that community at different points during that project. And we want to be partners to other projects like that moving forward as well, wherever they might be.
Amazing. Yeah, I was like, wait, was she going to say something? Yeah, no. I was just going to say, you know, amazing and thank you. And to our listeners, you know, listen to this podcast, take everything that, you know, Ted, Andre, and Kathy are saying and utilize those resources so that, you know, you can develop and you can be a homeowner and you can help your communities and so on and so forth. So that's what I've got. Cora and Kathy.
Played right into what I was going to ask. So for our listeners that are interested in these loan programs and whatnot, where can they find points of contact or resources? So in case they have any questions or they just want to get the ball rolling in applying for these things.
I would say visit our website at www.rd.usda.gov. And when you're there across the top, you'll see a contact button and it'll let you look for the offices and your local folks. And that's the best one, www.rd.usda.gov.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. So I don't have any other questions. Crystal, do you have any other questions? Anything else to share?
I was just going to add, it looked like Kathy maybe was going to share something about the contacts. Is the website is great. You can drill down once you get to the contacts, you can click on a state and you can find the housing programs director for a given state. Our guaranteed housing is run through the national office now, so that contact structure might have changed since the last time you visited us. So in addition to the website, if you don't have a relationship with our local staff and you want a bit of a personal touch, it's always okay to reach out to the tribal relations team that I lead for rural development. We can make those connections locally, make introductions. I'm sure Andrea and Kathy can do that as well. When people are visiting DC, like for the National American Indian Housing Council, they have a legislative summit every year where the TDHEs are in DC when people can travel. Customarily, we'd have lots of folks stop by. So if people want to meet with us in person when that's happening again, we're happy to coordinate those as well. Kathy's been involved in bunches of meetings that we've set up with tribes and TDHEs that want to learn more when they're in DC. So our doors are always virtually open as well as physically open when they can be. So come see us when it's safe and when we're able.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that. So that brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you again, Kathy, Andrea, and Ted. I have really enjoyed this episode. It's been very enlightening. And as always, thank you to our listeners for joining us in the Hobothinga podcast. If you enjoy our show, please rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And also visit our website, www.nativelearningcenter.com, to find information on upcoming webinars and virtual trainings. And please be sure to come back. As Ted mentioned, we have some more awesome episodes coming up with USDA Rural Development. So thank you again for your time, and we'll catch you next time.